This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. And we begin our Illinois politics roundtable this week with the United States Supreme Court. On Monday, the justices heard arguments in an Indiana bribery case, but the results could have significant effects on the corruption case against former Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan. Here to talk about that is Mark Walsh, who's covered the Supreme Court for outlets such as SCOTUS Blog and the American Bar Association Journal. He's joining us today as a contributor for Crane's Chicago Business, and he covered this week's arguments for them on Monday. Mark, welcome to the 21st Show.
Thanks, Brian. Thanks for having me.
So just what was this case all about? And maybe we can start with the person at the center of this case, James Snyder.
So this Indiana case is about the former mayor of Portage, Indiana. And he was elected in 2012. And around that time, he was kind of experiencing some personal financial difficulties. He owed some payroll taxes on a company of his, and some personal taxes, and he had some IRS levies on his bank accounts. And meanwhile, as he took office, Portage needed to purchase some new garbage trucks, and Snyder kind of chose a close friend of his to run the bidding process. And then the bids kind of were tailored to favor a company called Great Lakes Peterbilt that was owned by a couple of brothers who were interested in getting this contract. And these specifications were kind of arranged so that they would get the contract. And eventually two contracts worth about $1.1 million. And soon after that second contract, Great Lakes issued a check for about $13,000 to a firm owned by James Snyder, a private firm. There were some different explanations for this, but ultimately this was, you know, cast by federal prosecutors as a gratuity, and to them as an illegal gratuity under one of these federal bribery statutes.
This sounds like a pretty cut and dry case, and yet the Supreme Court is looking at this, the statutory language here, interpreting whether it applies in this case. Is the idea that maybe it's somehow acceptable that this mayor got, you know, some money in exchange for steering a contract, that maybe the federal government is misusing a law that it wasn't intended for? Or what is at issue, I guess, legally?
So there's a couple things going on. You know, this mayor has some other charges, and he's not, you know, even if he wins on these counts, would still be in some trouble, and that probably applies to Mike Madigan as well. It's just a difference between a bribe, which is a quid pro quo, involves a quid pro quo. I'm going to give you this money and you're going to take care of us, versus an after the fact, the idea of the gratuity, and gratuity is not in the statute, but the word gratuity, but the idea that we're going to, you know, take care of you after the fact. And the government would say that is still covered when it is done corruptly, when there's the consciousness that it was wrong.
You still shouldn't be tipping government officials for doing their government job, is basically what I'm hearing there. All right. There was an interesting moment at the oral arguments on Monday, and we're going to take a listen to some tape you shared with us. This is Justice Amy Coney Barrett. Let's just hear what she had to say.
What if it's a corrupt, like, sorry to pick, you know, an Illinois or Chicago, but what if you're talking about some sort of local unit or a corrupt hospital where that actually is kind of corrupt practice that everyone would agree would be wrongdoing, not the donation to the hospital. Talk about something that's more unsavory. Maybe these rewards are just kind of accepted in this small town, and you know, you can't use that guideline then that Justice Jackson is talking about what's standard, because graft could be standard or gratuities could be standard, even in unsavory cases.
All right, so we can maybe overlook the dig at Illinois and Chicago there, perhaps deserved. But what is the broader context? How does this speak to the bigger picture of how these arguments played out?
Well, I was kind of hoping to talk about the day
we could do that. Sure.
Minute, since it's your, and it was also at Illinois, and this is your Illinois politics show. I just thought it was interesting because she briefly was reaching in her mind, like, what's taking an example of a place where, again,
the most corrupt place I can think of.
Graft is normal.
Yeah.
And as I mentioned in my piece, she is from New Orleans. And I can say I've lived in Illinois. I grew up in Illinois. I've lived in Louisiana. New Orleans and Louisiana are sort of peas in a pod with Illinois and Chicago. Neither are Minneapolis when it comes to clean government. And so what she was saying is there were some different thoughts there. I mean, she wasn't calling Chicago a small town, or there were the questions. This is federal program, so it could be sweep in private entities. So the mention of the hospital, but it went to the question of whether the participants, whether the giver or the taker, were knew what they were doing was wrong. And the question came up, just what if, her point, I think, was what if just graft and gifts and gratuities were the norm?
Yeah, well, the norm of the political culture. And that's, I guess, is one of the things that's at issue in House Speaker Michael Madigan's corruption case. We've seen the trial there was supposed to be starting in April this month, but it's been postponed until the fall. I understand, to see what the Supreme Court does in this case. What are the ramifications potentially for former Speaker Madigan or even the so-called ComEd 4 who've had their sentencing postponed?
Right. So as I understand it, and I've looked, I'm not an expert on this story, but I've been following it a little bit. And I did look back at his superseding indictment. As I look at it, 5 of the 23 counts against Michael Madigan and his aide, I think, who are awaiting trial, involve this provision of federal law. So this, whatever the Supreme Court does and what it seems likely to do, at least narrow this statute or knock it out altogether, could then knock out some of the charges against Mike Madigan. And then for those who've already been convicted, I mean, they're appealing that, so they would benefit as well from just having any convictions on those counts possibly being thrown out. My general sense is that's not going to altogether let them walk with all these other charges and with the complexity of the indictments in those cases.
So even if some of the charges would be dropped against Speaker Madigan, there is still enough in different areas of the law that are not at issue here that case is likely to go forward.
Yeah, I mean, the federal government has a lot of tools in the United States Code for fighting public corruption. And some of them have been scaled back, not just this one that seems to be a little bit on the block. But, in recent years, the court has really scaled back some of the scope of these federal corruption statutes. I've had, cases from New York State recently, from New Jersey, the Bridgegate scandal in New Jersey, the governor of Virginia, who had his entire conviction thrown out by the Supreme Court, not all involving these provisions, but different ones.
Mark Walsh wrote about Monday's arguments at the U.S. Supreme Court for Crane's Chicago Business. Thanks for taking the time to be with us today on the 21st Show.
Thank you, Brian. I enjoyed it.
It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. And we turn now to the rest of Washington politics and how it relates to Illinois. And with us for that, as always, is Linda Kenyon, who covers the Congress for Illinois Public Media. Linda, good to talk with you again. Happy Friday.
Thank you, Brian. Happy Friday to you.
I'd like to begin this week with aid to Ukraine and Israel, also humanitarian assistance for conflict zones, including Gaza, on the table. It's something the House has been going back and forth on for months now, and really Republicans in the House. And now there's word that the current Speaker, Mike Johnson, is trying to push forward that package. We are taping this conversation late Thursday. Where do we stand now? Is this going to happen in the next few days, do you think?
Well, Speaker Johnson did put a collection of bills on the floor, and under a rule known as the 72-hour rule, it has to be available for members to read and study before they vote on this package of bills. And so that puts the vote on Saturday. And members of the House and the Senate, of course, hate to work on Saturdays and Sundays. So my guess is they may make short work out of it and then go to their home districts. Now, this package of bills is not just one foreign aid bill. It's actually three separate foreign aid bills, one for Ukraine, one for Israel, one for Taiwan and the Indo-Pacific. And as a separate matter, there could be a fourth aid bill that includes national security priorities like, for example, a TikTok ban and sanctions against Russia, China, and Iran, even though the Biden administration this week did already announce that there are going to be new sanctions against Iran. So one of the things that this little conglomeration of bills accomplishes is that it adds up to about $95 billion in foreign aid, which is the bill that the Senate passed 2 months ago that the House refused to put on the floor. And also, one of the things that this conglomeration of bills accomplishes is that, yes, it does not include border security, but it does allow a border security bill as demanded by some members of the House as a separate bill unrelated to these foreign aid bills and one that would come much later. So we have no timeline on that, but we do know that Speaker Johnson will be bringing a border security bill to the floor.
You and I have talked about the difficulty Johnson has had in working with his caucus on this. Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene filed a motion to oust Johnson that came after some big spending bills passed the House last month. How is that conversation developing as this matter of foreign aid that a significant portion of the Republican conference still opposes is playing out?
It's not going well for Speaker Johnson, especially when it comes to the Ukraine aid component of this conglomeration of bills, because Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia has already signaled that she's going to pull the trigger on her motion to vacate. And right now it only takes one member to seek to oust the speaker from the chair. And Marjorie Taylor Greene is saying she's going to do this because she's very upset about aid to Ukraine. She does not want aid to Ukraine at all. And so she has said that if he does this, even if it's a separate bill, she may, in fact, move forward with her motion to vacate. But Speaker Johnson was asked about that by reporters in the hallway outside the House chamber about 48 hours or so. It was actually sometime on Wednesday that he was asked about it. And he said, "My philosophy is that you have to do the right thing and you let the chips fall where they may." And then he also said, "If I operated out of fear over a motion to vacate, I would never be able to do my job." He also said, "I could make a selfish decision and do something that's different, but I'm doing what I believe to be the right thing. I think providing lethal aid to Ukraine right now is critically important." So he's kind of saying, "I'm going to do what I think is right. And Marjorie, you go ahead and do what you think is right."
What do we understand about why Marjorie Taylor Greene and members of the Freedom Caucus, or I tongue-in-cheek heard former Illinois Congressman Adam Kinzinger refer to them as the Freedom Club, because they're not much in the way of organizing actual legislation to pass, but that's a conversation for another day. What do we understand about why they are so opposed to America's ongoing support of Ukraine? This seemed to be a bipartisan issue not long ago, and I guess it still is by definition here, right?
One of the things that they're saying is that there should not be any foreign aid to Ukraine until the U.S. takes care of its own house. In other words, deals with the border security issue. As a bit of a peace offering to Marjorie Taylor Greene and other members of the so-called House Freedom Caucus, he decided that he will put a border security bill on the floor, which, by the way, before he refused to put on the floor because the Republicans did not like the bill, including those who were getting their direction from former President Trump, who said, if you deal with border security and he has fully admitted this and posted on his Truth Social website. If you do something about border security, that could solve the problem, and that would work against the campaign for Trump to return to the White House because he does not want to give Joe Biden a victory. So they seem to be doing this sort of approach avoidance behavior repeatedly on aid to Ukraine and whether border security should come up first or whether aid to Ukraine should come up at all. And so that is one of the beefs. Marjorie Taylor Greene and those who track with her are saying not one dime for aid for security overseas until we have a secure U.S. border.
So just about a minute left in our time together. Procedurally, is this the sort of thing that, okay, let's say the House does vote for this over the weekend on Saturday. Can the Senate immediately come back and ratify what they've done and send it to the president? Will there have to be some sort of conference committee? What's next?
Yeah, well, you know, ideally, in a perfect world, the Senate would act on it right away. But the Senate can't act on it right away because the Senate is going to be out of town next week. So that means Ukraine is going to have to wait another week and possibly longer than that, because if there's differences at all that the Senate disagrees with, it's going to probably send it back to the House with changes, and then it's going to have to go to a conference committee. Now, there are a lot of members of the U.S. Senate who are saying, yes, they preferred the original Ukraine aid bill. They preferred the original one bill that included all four of the areas of foreign aid that was of concern to them, like Israel, for example. But now they're at a point where they're about ready to say, look, let's just pass something. This has been delayed long enough, and Ukraine is really in dire need.
Linda Kenyon is going to be working this weekend, just like the members of our congressional delegation. Thank you so much for being with us on the 21st show.
Thank you, Brian.
More to come after a short break. Stay with us.